words in papers, words in books, words on TV, words for books, words of comfort, words of peace, words to make the fighting cease, words to tell you what to do, words are working hard for you. Eat your words, but don't go hungry. Words have always nearly hung me.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. What are the words and phrases that you're currently in love with? I'm at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. And what are the words and phrases you hate? 800-289-5869. How about the words you love or hate, and why do they prompt those reactions in you? It's conversation at KUOW.org. Here's what we heard from some of you earlier today.
I wanted to submit aha moment, because we have a word. It's epiphany. It works perfectly fine.
Baby bump. Oh, man. Let's get rid of that.
Staycation. It just grates on the ears and got overused at the start of the current economic crisis, that it's just worn thin.
Incentivize, for giving incentive, prioritize, for setting priorities, tasked, which is, I suppose, a combination of told and asked. I yell at the radio, now, prioritization, you know, incentivization. I mean, come on. Speak English here.
What are the words that are a burr under your saddle? 206-543-5869. Or the words that you're loving, the phrases that you just really enjoy because maybe they're just fun to say, ding bat or what's up, or maybe they just nail a meaning, schadenfreude. 206-543-5869. The conversation is about words. Ben Zimmer is a linguist, a lexicographer, a language columnist, and a self-described word nut. He's the language columnist for the Wall Street Journal and executive producer of Visual Thesaurus and Vocabulary.com. Ben, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
So on Twitter, I called you a word maven, but Jess objected. She wrote, I thought maven was the feminine version. So set me straight, Ben, that I when I called you a word maven, was this a grievous insult?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, that's a word that comes from Yiddish, originally from Hebrew. In the Hebrew, maven just means a person who has understanding. And it entered Yiddish and was sort of very often used a bit in a self-deprecating fashion when it entered Yiddish. William Safire called himself a language maven, but again, he was being a bit self-deprecating when he called himself that. It can apply equally to men or women, so I'm happy to wear the maven mantle.
Ben, I'm always amazed when we do this show how some words and usage just drives people crazy, even provoking them to violence. Nick writes, I really, really hate the use of the word space to mean a type of commercial business. The word has existed for many generations. It's market. Next time I hear some hipster geek or Shark Tank shark say, I'm not in that space, I will dump his green tea frappuccino on his overpriced hairdo. There's nothing technically wrong with saying it's a space, is it, rather than a market?
Sometimes words, we get to be familiar with them in one context and when they're extended to another one, especially if it's in a kind of a trendy usage or associated with marketing or management or things like that, where sort of trendy use of language is popular, then we may react negatively to it. And I'm always amazed when there are expressions of what we might call word rage, where just the use of a word can provoke that kind of reaction. Of course, I don't think that a person would literally do what they're threatening to, but just the fact that this violent imagery comes into people's minds sometimes when they hear a word is a bit surprising. People take words very seriously and sometimes in a very negative way.
Word rage. Many things that rage is added onto. So, Ben, you've been following a lot about how words are used in the news, and there are a lot of U.S. embassies closed today, all because of chatter picked up by intelligence agencies. You've been looking at the use of the word chatter.
That's right. My column for the Wall Street Journal, which will appear on Saturday, the next one, I'll be looking into that word chatter, because it's interesting. We've just heard that that's the reason the embassies are closing, because there's an awful lot of chatter out there, and that means a kind of communication that's been intercepted, possibly indicating a terror plot. So it's interesting how a word like chatter has developed, where originally chatter would just be used to talk about the sound that birds make or other small animals. Eventually you can apply that to humans who are just talking idly or incessantly. But then during World War II and subsequent wars, there was a lot of focus on radio chatter when we were trying to intercept signals from the enemy. You know, for instance, the Germans or the Japanese during World War II, you have to monitor their radio chatter. And from there, we get the current usage, which relates to electronic communication, emails or other types of communication that our intelligence agencies are looking into to try to foil a potential terrorist plot.
You know, it's funny, it's done a 180. I remember when I was a kid, the term chatterbox was someone who prattled on about insignificant or silly things, but now chatter is a serious enough thing to shut down embassies.
Yeah, well, I guess the idea is that there could be chatter out there that, that for instance, terror suspects might not be thinking is so important. They're just sharing some back-channel communication, but that could actually give us some valuable clues about their future movements.
Now, there's a lot of controversy over unmanned drone strikes, in part because of charges that many civilians are dying alongside. And the word drone is changing, too. You've been looking into that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, drone has a fascinating history. You can sort of go back to the original meaning of it, referring to a male honeybee whose only job is to mate with the queen. And there are various meanings that are related to that. For instance, if you drone on and on, that comes from the idea that you're sort of buzzing like a bee. You're making a persistent hum. But the drone that we are talking about in the news, these pilotless, radio-controlled aircraft, that goes all the way back to the 1930s, because the chief of naval operations for the U.S. Navy saw a demonstration of a remote-controlled plane that was called the Queen Bee. And in homage to that, we started a program in the mid-30s to make target drones for target practice. And so that's what we have now. Of course, they're much more sophisticated now. And the current drone program is very controversial, so much so that drone is now changing into a verb, meaning to be targeted in a drone strike. So getting droned means that, you know, if a person has been targeted or killed in a drone strike, and that kind of shift from noun to verb shows that there's a sort of a new stage in the life cycle of this word.
And, you know, we just heard some people complaining about nouns that are being turned into verbs, and that just annoys a lot of people. And I get the sense that they feel as though it's just lazy to take a noun and turn it into a verb. What do you think about that, Ben?
There certainly are lots of complaints about that. Very often, if you ask people's pet peeves, they will talk about verbings. So, you know, when a noun gets changed into a verb, or conversely, when a verb might change into a noun. So words like ask, for instance, becoming nouns. So, you know, but of course, these changes from one part of speech to another have been going on throughout the history of English, and many of them go on without us even really noticing it. But it's certain ones, again, that might be associated with certain trendy terminology, management speak, and so forth, that really get under people's skin. And so sometimes it seems like that this is just an unnecessary way of trying to spruce up your language by taking a mild-mannered noun and turning it into a verb, or vice versa.
We're talking about words you love, words you hate, with Ben Zimmer, language columnist for the Wall Street Journal. And let's go to Charles. He's listening to us today in the Green Lake neighborhood. He's got a word that he really is liking these days. What is it, Charles? Charles, are you with us?
Sorry about that. The word that I'm really fond of lately is coup d'etat.
Why are you fond of coup d'etat?
Well, just this morning I heard the word coup in relation to something that happened in Istanbul. I wasn't paying too much attention to it. But it reminded me that I'd heard this word back in third grade. And initially, I heard coup d'etat in third grade. And one, I thought it was something musical because it sounds very lyrical, but it actually has more to do with war than music, which sort of fascinates me.
And it's one of those words that's kind of fun to say.
Very much so.
Yeah. Hey, Charles, thanks a lot. We're talking about words we love, words we hate. Jeremy's with us in North Seattle today. Jeremy, do you have a word, love or hate, you'd like to share with us?
Well, I wouldn't say that I hate the word, but I just am bothered by the misuse of the word theory instead of hypothesis. So everybody nowadays says, I have a theory that such and such, you know, they're educated guests. When they should say hypothesis, until it's scientifically proven. And it just, it makes me feel old, like, well, this is what they used to teach in school, and I don't know if they still teach it or not, but they should.
Well, if you say I have a theory, it sounds stronger than saying I have a hypothesis. And theories are overturned, Jeremy, and science theories are overturned not infrequently.
I suppose that's true. I just remember being drilled into me as a junior high student that a theory is not a theory until scientifically proven.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's just one of these, I don't know, old school things that I, you know, like I say, I get, in a way, I feel like it kind of dates me to think this way.
Well, let's ask Ben Zimmer. Ben Zimmer, is the creeping use of theory instead of hypothesis something that you have noticed in language over the years?
Well, if it is a creeping usage, it's been creeping for quite a while. I just actually checked the online Oxford English Dictionary, and it says that theory has been used in a loose or general sense to mean a hypothesis since, well, the earliest example they have is from 1792, from a letter from Edmund Burke saying, whether I am right in the theory or not, the fact is as I state it. So this loose or general sense of a mere hypothesis is a way that people have been using that word theory for quite a while now, about at least three centuries. Now, of course, if you learn in school the technical difference between a theory and a hypothesis, then yes, it could rub you the wrong way if people are using this more general sense of the word. But I would not chalk it up to lazy kids today if it's been going on for a few centuries.
Jeremy, thanks for your phone call. I love some new uses of words, kind of paring down of words. Robert writes to us. He does too. For some reason, I get a real kick out of totes as a truncation of totally, especially when paired with adorbs, adorable, or inappropes, inappropriate. Given that I'm an adult male and not a teenage girl, it's totes inappropes for me to use either of these phrases. But I love the reaction I get from my friends, mostly groans or eye rolls. And Ben, have you noticed this kind of truncation of words? Totes.
I mean, that's one of the big trends in online usage as well as spoken language among, let's say, high school, college age. If you gather up a bunch of college kids and ask them what the latest slang terms are, very probably they will include totes for totally, obs for obviously, adorbs for adorable, and so forth. It may seem a little inappropriate for someone older to use the terms, but I appreciate that the listener can admire those terms even if he's not using them himself. And that's nice to see, too, because very often neologisms, new innovations in language, are people's reaction very often are negative, especially if it's associated with young people or youth culture. So it's nice to see some positive feelings about terms like that.
Well, that's partly why young people do that, right? That's why I did it. It was to annoy people.
Yes, in large part, sometimes to create some other sort of distance or create a kind of an in-group perhaps older people are, shut off from. So I mean, that slang has long served that purpose.
Michael writes to say that his current word hate is thinking outside the box has been driving me crazy lately, and I'm having trouble coming up with something better than think creatively. Is thinking outside the box just gone down and become simply a cliche? What do you think about that, Ben?
Well, with something like outside the box, I think it always had a kind of association with managerial styles or corporate organization, where they're encouraging you to step outside of conventional thinking. That's been the case since the 70s, when the term first came to be, and so that has always been. I think it's been a cliche for quite a while, but it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, what do you say instead of that? You can say think creatively, think unconventionally, but having a nice metaphor like outside the box which can evoke a certain image. Some people think about the puzzle where you have to connect the nine dots of a square grid using a certain number of lines, and the only way you can do it is if you make the line go outside of the square grid. You know, things like that, they summon a certain mental image that can be helpful to make it vivid. At the same time, if it's overused, of course, it can just be a worn-out cliche.
Ben, that reminds me of that Apple slogan, Think Different, that drove people crazy.
Yeah, no, that was an interesting one that, that you know, in advertising, very often playing with language will be a way to sort of make the language stick a little better. And slogans can sometimes, you know, have some non-standard usage of language. Think Different is one example of that, that, you know, Apple started using in the late 90s, I think. And it was actually a very successful ad campaign, but yes, there was also a backlash against people saying that it should have been differently instead of different. But by saying think different, you know, by using that adjective, it may summon different images to people's minds. It's think different. Different itself is kind of a whole concept that one is supposed to think in terms of, rather than so just that little tweak of grammar can make it different enough for it to stand out in people's minds.
When someone draws a red line, or sometimes they say, I'm drawing a bright red line, it signifies a line you better not cross. And Ben Zimmer, you've been looking at the origins of this phrase, which are kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, that's one that we hear quite a lot. For instance, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, has been using it quite a lot, referring to Iran's nuclear program and how Iran is edging up to the red line. And interestingly, red line has its own kind of evocation in Hebrew, in Israel, where they talk about, for instance, the Sea of Galilee, where it has a big freshwater supply. If it goes below a certain level, then they're running out of fresh water. And so they call that the red line, or Kav Adom in Hebrew. But it actually goes back further in English as well. You know, there was the thin red line, which was a regiment in the Battle of Balaclava in the Crimean War. But more recently, people might think about the red line on the dial on for a car or a plane, which indicates the gauge measuring RPM, revolutions per minute. And the red line would indicate that's the maximum safe limit. And so that maximum engine speed idea helped to popularize the idea that the red line is one that you should not cross. And there's an older expression, the line in the sand.
Right.
But I think people have been drawn to red line as, you know, perhaps a bolder sounding metaphor than the line in the sand.
And also that's been turned into a verb. I'm redlining.
That's true, yeah. One more example of how easy it is to just turn a noun into a verb.
Let's go to Mary, who's listening today in Renton. She's got a word, hate, she wanted to share. Mary, what is it?
Well, it's a phrase, and it's when I hear someone say, oh, they've got my back, or, you know, like they're in West Side Story and they're snapping. I mean, it just makes me nuts. And then also newscasters who use informal words, like they use cop instead of policeman, or kids instead of children. That makes me nuts.
Mary, thanks for sharing that with us. We didn't have a time to get all of your word hates and loves on the air, but you can go to our Facebook page, KUOW's The Conversation, see what other people have added and add your own. Ben Zimmer, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Ben Zimmer, language columnist for The Wall Street Journal, executive producer of Visual Thesaurus and Vocabulary.com. David Hyde produces our program with Arwin Nix. Allie Ferguson provides production help, and Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.